And welcome back to the Sundance Reel.
I'm Rhett Bruff, and my co-host, they're running the board, John Burdick. And we're now talking about a film in the, I believe it's in the World
Cinema Documentary.
The Painter and the Thief. There must be a truism that the directors of narrative films write their films, write their stories. The directors of documentaries, the stories happen to them. And John was just wondering about this off mic before we went into this, is how did this happen?
Give a little bit of background. The Painter and the Thief is a synopsis of an artist's best friends and the thief who stole her paintings. She becomes the closest ally when he is severely hurt in a car crash and needs full-time care, even if her paintings are not found. But then the tables turn. That's your synopsis as written. Benjamin, thank you for coming to KPCW.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. So as I was off of camera, I got to see this film, and I mean, from a documentary film point, it's almost like everything fell in your lap. Can you talk to the aspect of how this film came together for you?
So I was actually doing research on art robberies, because in Norway we have a great tradition of art robberies, actually, with a lot of Edvard Munch, The Scream, you know, that's been stolen many times. So I did a lot of research on that. That fascinates me, art robberies.
How do they keep stealing art in your country?
And then this art robbery was on the front newspapers in Norway, and I immediately took contact with the artist, and I got to know that she had approached the thief during the trial and asked the thief if she could paint him. And I thought that was just an intriguing story. So I just began filming. And I began filming when they had met four times. So I was early in the process of filming them. And we also had a lot of archival footage before that. So I had all of the story before I came along covered. But at the beginning, I thought that this is probably going to be a short documentary, 10 minutes long documentary.
At the most.
Yeah. And then so many crazy things happened all the time. And, you know, usually documentaries, they have a lot of talking heads, and they tell the story of what has happened before. This documentary, I was there with the camera in all the decisive moments and filming it as it unfolds. And I think that's what you're referring to. That, yeah. And I was very, very lucky, because there's so many twists and turning points in this story. So it was just amazing being there. But I did film actually for 3 years.
And I was wondering how long the filming was.
And I had 300 hours of footage to do the
just
edit.
A little time in the editing room, right?
So, 8 months, yeah.
And watching this film and the documentary style that you used, it wasn't talking heads. And it was, at points, I was watching this, I thought I was watching a fiction film. I mean, it was just the way that you told the story. And these people, you know, just, they were so natural in front of your camera. And I think he broke the fourth wall once. That was it. It was just when he had recovered from his accident, was standing, and he needed some recognition. Like, I'm walking. And that's the only time in the film that I saw one of your characters break the fourth wall, a bit, basically.
When the painter, you know, in the early stages of befriending the thief, I mean, if you were watching this as a dramatic film, you're basically wondering, you know, is all this part of she's trying to win his friendship in order to get the information out of him about where the paintings are? And was that your suspicion? And was that the suspicion of the feeling of the thief?
I think that of course, when Barbara approached the thief in court and asked to paint him, she wanted to also know where her paintings were. You know, these paintings were her babies. She used a lot of time with them. Like, it's I think actually they are her masterworks, the paintings that got stolen.
And the name of those two paintings?
It's Swan Song and Chloe and Emma.
Okay.
And, and they didn't know where the paintings were. Like, the thief said, I don't remember anything about stealing those paintings.
It was a heroin trip or something that he was...
Yeah, but, you know, it was also, you know, it was taken really carefully, all of the nails out of the frame. So it really was really cleverly done. And I also have to add that, you know, the thief, he has a tattoo on his chest which says, "Snitchers are a dying breed." So of course he would not snitch to tell where the paintings are if he knows. Yeah. So I think that, but I think that in the beginning, she was, the painter was really curious about the thief. And she saw kind of also a potential to paint her thief with all, you know, a lot of tattoos. He was a really fascinating guy. But of course, she wanted to find a painting. So this is also what the film is exploring, all the motives of the subjects to have contact with each other. And it's not just like a easy Disney story of an unlikely friendship. It's much more complex than that.
Yeah, well, part of the complexity is that you think that the story is about the thief who has this this unhappy history and drug use and alcohol, etc. And the painter is this rather benevolent presence. But as you get into her, you find out that she has her problems and you know some really tough issues to deal with on her side too.
That's correct. So what we do in the film is that we change perspective. So first we follow the painter's perspective of what has happened. And then after like 23 minutes, we change the perspective and we see everything from the thief's point of view. And then we also go back in time. So we have overlapping scenes. And this is really fascinating. And this is something I'm really fascinated about. How do we kind of view the world differently? So we change perspective throughout the film in order to understand the subjects better.
Yeah. And was your filming at times, did you have filming on kind of two different tracks? I mean, the two of them together, you would film that, but then she goes off and on her thing and he's going off on his thing. Did you have different filming operations following the two of them?
Two crews?
Yeah. So I actually knew a lot about, I knew at many times more than they knew about each other because I was there with them a lot of the time alone also. I called them a lot, so I got a lot of information. So that is what the film is kind of, that's how the film is working. But I also have to add that, you know, I wanted to portray this guy, you know, if you hear the word a junkie criminal, you get like all these sort of ideas about this guy that he isn't, yeah, like prejudice about this guy. I wanted to show the human being. I wanted to show that this guy, the thief, is really an intelligent, humoristic, nice person. So that's also why we needed in the film to show the different perspectives.
And her angst as an artist. I mean, you saw, you know, you talk about the broke artist and the stuff of her, you know, being broke and then the relationship that forms between the thief and her being in this dependent relationship that she had. Again, that is magic in the way that you crafted that. Can you speak a little bit about how this affected her relationship?
Yeah. Barbara, she is, the painteress is very fascinated about the thief. And, you know, the thief is her muse. So it's also a classical artist muse story. But what is different here is that usually you see films where the artist is a man and the muse is a woman. Here it's the opposite. The muse is a woman. And that was really fascinating to explore. And there's, of course, there's some sexual tension there in the film also. And the artist, you know, both of them have backgrounds that are destructive. And they have self-destructive behavior. And that's also what we are exploring in the film, to see that actually these two people that in the beginning you think are really different, they are pretty much alike in many ways also.
And one subtlety that I think American audiences may be a little baffled about it, but this is in English and Norwegian, and the woman and the painter talking together, and the woman in her realm and her life is talking to people in English, and they're talking. And on his track, he is talking Norwegian, and all the other people are talking Norwegian. What's the reason for that?
It's a really simple answer to that, and that is that the painter, she's from Czech Republic, but she lives in Norway with her husband. But she can't speak Norwegian. She hasn't learned Norwegian, so the only way she can communicate with people in Norway is through English. And since I'm Norwegian, I speak Norwegian with the thief because he can speak Norwegian. So that's the reason. So 80% of the film is English speaking, and that's because they speak English to each other. That's the only way they can understand each other.
And then, yeah, with your introduction to him and his first interview or talking, it's fun how it grows. And then you see almost a blend of the two languages, like we'll go in and out of different words from Norwegian and words from English. So that was a nice blending, too. Is that just a happenstance, or did you think about the dialogue?
I think we have a lot of expressions in English and Norwegian, okay, too. Okay. So I think that's the reason why.
I don't speak Norwegian.
Not to give away any spoiler, but I'll just say the fate of the two paintings, your movie answers the question about the fate of one painting. And yeah. I bet at screenings you're going to get questions from the audience asking you for an update. It's like, do we know?
It's the sequel, Rick. That's what it's going to be.
The painter and the thief too.
Yeah.
It might be a painter and a thief too. You know, these two people are, it's so amazing, these two subjects. They have their emotions on the outside. You can really see it. And I also have to mention that one of the most, you know, the best scenes for me in the film is when the thief sees himself painted for the first time.
Oh.
And, you know, the thief is a really tough guy with a lot of tattoos, you know. You know, snitchers are a dying breed tattoo, really tough guy.
And sleeves.
Yeah. A lot of sleeves. But when he sees himself painted for the first time, you know, his reaction to that is just beyond words. You could never guess kind of his reaction. I don't want to spoil that, yeah, because that's, I think that the audience needs to see it for himself.
Well, yes. Go see the Painter and the Thief. We've been sitting with Benjamin Rhee here with the Painter and the Thief. If you missed it, you can catch it still. Let's see. We've got the 30th, yeah. Thursday the 30th, 6 p.m. at the Temple Theater here in Park City. Also Friday the 31st at the Redstone Cinemas right up here in Park City. Thank you so much for being here on the Sundance Reel.
Thank you very much for having me.
Tune in and find out about some of the unknown and talented independent filmmakers from around the world. Join us for the Sundance Reel each weekday morning between 9 and 10. We'll highlight some of the most intriguing films being presented at this year's Sundance Film Festival. That's the Sundance Reel weekday mornings from 9 to 10 through January 31st, right here on KPCW or online, kpcw.org.
The Sundance Reel is brought to you in part by Sundance Institute, presenting the 2020 Sundance Film Festival from January 23rd through February 2nd. And Acura, proud 10-year sponsor of the festival and supporter of independent film and music. Learn more at acura.com.